Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. At the Democratic presidential debate in Des Moines, Iowa last night, there was the dust-up over what Senator Bernie Sanders might have said or not said about the possibility of a woman president. There was Handshake Gate, which, yes, I am saying with tongue firmly in cheek because of the almost ridiculous nature of the breathless play-by-play political coverage we get at this point in primary season. A point, by the way, where no one has yet voted. But they soon will, in Iowa, and that's the real story. That's the one that matters. So today, we're going to try something completely different. We're going to hold our own mini caucus with Iowa Democrats to hear how they make the case to each other for their favorite candidate. So this hour on Point, our very own Iowa caucus. And Iowans listening out there, you can join us. Who are you going to be caucusing for in 3 weeks from now? Are you leaning towards a particular candidate or issue? And did anything you heard in last night's debate solidify your choice? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And we're actually going to start today with Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst. He's with us from Hanover, New Hampshire. And Jack, let me tell you, it is such a great pleasure to actually talk with you. I don't have a chance to do this usually.
It's my pleasure.
Well, let me so Jack, this was our kind of big idea here, that we reached out to listeners in Iowa that we know are On Point listeners, and we said, hey, come, let's like sort of craft this metaphorical caucus room where people are going to get together and make their case to each other. So we might get a different kind of insight about what's going to happen in 3 weeks when the actual Iowa caucuses take place. I don't know if it's going to work, but what do you think of this idea?
Well, I think it's a good idea. We're modeling in a mini way what's going to be happening. I'm going to be listening for one thing. What is the degree of confidence these Iowa Democrats have that they are picking a president? Because, you know, they're very bad at it, Iowa Democrats. In the 10 active cycles since 1976, they've only picked two winners, Jimmy Carter and Barack Obama. 2 out of 10. It isn't quite the kiss of death to be nominated to win the Iowa caucus. That would be administered by New Hampshire, which is at only 1 in 10. But it's a record that has to trouble Iowa Democrats at some level. That they're good at picking nominees. 7 out of 10, bad at picking presidents.
Okay, well. Not to trouble the Iowans we're about to hear from too much here, but your point is well taken. So let's listen to how our Iowans joining us today on Point are going to make the case for their candidates. So let's start in Kellogg, Iowa, with Barney Berenfuse. He is a supporter of Senator Bernie Sanders. Barney is also a livestock farmer. Welcome to On Point, Barney.
Hello, welcome.
I'm so glad to have you. And joining us from Des Moines, Iowa, is Mike Tramontina. He is a supporter of Senator Elizabeth Warren. Mike is a retired officer with the Iowa Department of Economic Development. Mike, thank you for being with us today on the program.
Thank you.
Okay, so let me start. We're sort of mentally placing ourselves in this metaphorical caucus room. And Barney, let me start with you. Make your case to Mike about why Bernie Sanders is your pick and should be Mike's pick, too.
Well, we've been for Bernie, and we were for Bernie very strong supporters the last time around, too. We definitely feel he has the strongest rural platform. We've read the platforms of about four of the candidates, the rural platforms. The idea that Bernie is willing to break up the monopolies as small farmers, the monopolies have been pinching us for a long time. The universal health care is huge for us personally. It was just absolutely killed us until I finally got old enough to get on Medicare. So, and the 10-20-30 plan that's the proposal by Representative Clyburn, I think it is, we really think that's a good idea for where to put the money in the country to spread it very evenly amongst people that need it. So that would be the beginning, where I would start right there.
Okay, Mike. I'm actually going to take a step back here. So, gentlemen, talk with each other. Mike, are you sold on that?
Certainly in part. I don't disagree with any part of that, Barney, because Elizabeth Warren and Senator Sanders have probably been two of the closest allies in the Senate during the entire 6 years, 7 years that she's been there. They have co-sponsored a ton of legislation, and they vote very nearly the same on nearly all things. And as you know, they both have the same views or very similar views on Medicare for All and the transition to Medicare for All. One thing that that I really like about Elizabeth Warren that I think really sets her apart is that it is a bigger picture than just looking at the rural situation, which is not healthy in Iowa. And I totally agree with that, Barney. But I think all of America and our American economy and capitalism as we know it is not working in America anymore. And we have that problem is very similar to the situation that America favored saw in the late 1920s when there was tremendous income inequality, just as there is today, and the economy was pushing all the income clear just to the top 10%. There was tremendous fear of immigrants, and there was an economy dominated by high tariffs. And America needed something different, and they turned to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Mm. And he put in an entire system of economic regulation. He brought in regulation of the banks through the FDIC, Securities and Exchange Commission, Food and Drug Administration, Federal Housing Administration, Social Security, and I could go on. In other words, he put in place a system of regulation to regulate that capitalist economy. And he set it on a course that had it growing steadily and producing income and created the greatest middle class in the world over a 60-year period. That is what I think you could fairly describe that as. It was called the New Deal, but I think it could be fairly described as big systemic change. And that is what Elizabeth Warren is really offering, this bigger systemic change. This economy is generating income now, which is just going to the top 1%.
Yeah. Well,
and
so Mike,
those similar problems.
Forgive me. I told both of you I'd step back, but I also kind of have to play the role of referee and watching the time as well. So, so forgive me for that. But Barney, is anything that Mike said kind of, I mean, there's a lot of overlap there, but would it change your view?
Well, I guess nothing that he said, it doesn't differentiate her from Warren from Bernie.
Yeah.
So they're very, very similar. That's, we will definitely agree with. We just feel like the farmers, her farm plan is a stronger farm plan, and I think it connects better with farmers.
Okay. Well, so let me do something here now. Just step kind of right into. I really appreciate how both of you were addressing this from the point of like deep policy, but there's also the politics of the moment. I just want to get a sense from both you, Barney, and Mike about, you know, the temporary dust up about whether or not Bernie Sanders said that a woman can't be voted as president. That did come up last night in the debate. And so here is how I just want to play a moment for how Senator Warren responded to that.
Bernie is my friend, and I am not here to try to fight with Bernie. But look, this question about whether or not a woman can be president has been raised, and it's time for us to attack it head on. And I think the best way to talk about who can win is by looking at people's winning record. So, can a woman beat Donald Trump? Look at the men on this stage. Collectively, they have lost 10 elections. The only people on this stage who have won every single election that they've been in are the women, Amy and me.
That was Senator Warren last night in Des Moines. Barney, I'm just wondering, when you saw that, what did you think of it?
Well, I guess I have a hard time making too much of it. I guess from the people we talk to knocking on doors, we don't feel that their resistance to her is because of her gender. Even Trump voters.
Barney, you there? Oh, okay. We're going to try and get Barney right back here. Mike, but Barney was just saying, he was just starting by saying that he didn't, when door knocking, he didn't feel like the resistance to Senator Warren was because of her gender. What do you think of that?
I'd say two quick things. One is, one big difference, clear difference between Bernie and Elizabeth Warren is that Bernie labels himself a socialist. I am not a socialist. Elizabeth Warren is not a socialist. She, in fact, has said many times she is a capitalist down into her bones. I think that that label in itself is a big electability problem. Secondly, in Iowa, we saw in the 2018 election across the country, women candidates, women voters, and a huge electoral victory. In Iowa, we had four congressmen, three Democrats, three Republicans, one Democrat. And in the last election, we flipped two of those Republican Congress members out. Freedom Caucus members went out, and in came two fresh Democratic women, one of which had no political experience at all, Cindy Axne, and the second, Abby Finkenauer, which had served one term in the Iowa legislature. In other words, the voters and the public looked at these candidates, saw these white guys with a long record of Republican voting, and they saw these fresh, optimistic women, and they not only voted for him, but the turnout, 60% of the voters who elected those women here and across the country were women. And I think that we really have to recognize that, and we have to go with it. I think Elizabeth Warren has the best chance to unify the party in Iowa and across the country and to win.
Well, Mike Tramontina, a supporter of Senator Elizabeth Warren. He is a retired former officer with the Iowa Department of Economic Development. Mike, thank you so much, and thank you for helping get us started on our On Point mini caucus here.
Thank you.
And Barney Barenfuse from Kellogg, Iowa, thank you for joining us today. He's a senator, a supporter of Senator Bernie Sanders. I'm sorry your phone line got cut off, Barney, but thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk with supporters of Mayor Pete Buttigieg and Senator Amy Klobuchar. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're trying something a little different this hour. We are holding our own little mini caucus in advance of the Iowa caucuses, which are 3 weeks from now. So we're kind of trying to do this radio version of a caucus. And I'm going to tell you right now, it will have all the organic spontaneity of an actual event, but just on the radio. Before the break, we heard from a couple of Iowans, one who supported Senator Bernie Sanders and another who will be caucusing for Senator Elizabeth Warren. And let's go to our phones. Let's go to Laura, who's calling from Des Moines, Iowa. Okay, Laura, so when you're in the caucus room, which corner are you going to be standing in?
I will be squarely in the Warren corner.
And why is that?
Well, you know, it's interesting that the gentleman earlier talking about the similarities, and I think that's really true. I've been a fan of Bernie's for a long time, but one of my issues is parity and accessibility to power and privilege. And he has had over 30 years to be within these power structures, and he's done a lot to make them more equitable for people, for sure. There's no doubt about that. He's pushed that narrative and that policy position, and I'm so thankful for that. They are similar, and so if I can have a woman instead of a guy at this point, I have to kind of parrot what that the gentleman who supports her said earlier. She is a unifier, yeah. And, you know, what have we got to lose? Men have had a chance to get it right. Let's see if a woman can get it right. And she is correct. Every woman that has run, including Hillary Clinton, has won their votes. Mm. So women can do it, and sometimes we can do it better.
So, Laura, let me ask you, if I understand how parts of how a caucus works, that that supporters for certain candidates try to convince others or reach out to other Iowans in the room and say, you know, come over to our corner. So who are you going to be reaching out to?
Sure. Well, any undecided. So I don't know all the intricacies because it's a little bit like gobbledygook math, but it sounds like we only have one chance to realign if your person's not viable. So I will be going for Klobuchar people. I will be going for anybody who was with Cory Booker and is not decided. I'll be, you know, having conversations with Tom Steyer's people. I think he's great. I cheated. I got on twice this week onto your show, and I mentioned him. His climate policy is the best of all the candidates. Yeah. So I'll be working the crowd and just, you know, gently but firmly trying to get people over to support Warren.
Now, Laura, are you saying you're a repeat on pointer here?
Well, I love your show, and I was actually on Monday, and I was like the last caller on your Monday show, and we have a lot of ice here today, so I hope everyone who came out for the debates gets home okay, because it's pretty nasty.
Well, I appreciate that you're a faithful listener here and a caller. So, Laura, thank you so much for that. Let's go to Mary Lee, who's calling from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Mary Lee, do you have your mind made up?
I do not. I thought I did earlier in the year. I do not. Now,
why not? What changed?
I was swept off my feet by one candidate, to be honest. But the more I researched, there are a few issues I found, and so I started listening to others again. And my
okay, Mary Lee, I got to ask you who had captured your imagination at the beginning and no longer does?
Pete Buttigieg.
Why?
And I may start there. I think he's the smartest man to come down the pike, and smartest human, male or female, to come down the pike in a long time. And I think he does have incredible experience for being such a young man. I was a little uncomfortable with some statements he made regarding Israel.
Mm. Okay.
I have been a Biden supporter in past caucuses and in past primaries. And I think Joe has a lot to offer, but I think his sadly, I'm not sure it's his time anymore. And, I keep looking. And last night, you know, there was a commercial that came on that moved me more than any political commercial I'd seen for a long time. But it was for a candidate I generally don't like. So I am feeling very confused and frustrated. And I planned a caucus like I have every year. But I really have never gone into it before feeling so undecided.
So you're going to walk into the room not knowing, not having made up your mind. That's so interesting. What?
Well, we might have 3 weeks. Somebody might grab me by then. Something might happen. Something could happen the night before that would solidify, you know, my opinion.
What do you think you need that you haven't had yet that would solidify your opinion?
I need, my biggest concern is, again, I'm one of those that would say we just need a new president. And so, yes, my biggest concern still comes down to who can be the one that can be Donald Trump.
Right.
And a feel for whether this country is whether to borrow an Obama word, audacious enough to hope for some significant change. The commercial I mentioned that moved me was recalling how JFK excited us to do something crazy. We got to the moon because somebody wanted something new and daring for the United States. And I do too, but I'm not sure that someone being bold and daring and as radical as some of our progressive candidates are, if they can pick up the rest of the votes needed to win the election.
Interesting. Well, Mary Lee, thank you so much for your call. Okay, so let's go back to our on-point mini caucus goers, folks we've lined up to talk to us. But before I do that, since we just heard in our caller's mention of Mayor Pete Buttigieg and Senator Amy Klobuchar, here's a couple of moments from last night's Democratic presidential debate in Des Moines, and former Mayor Pete Buttigieg talked about support amongst some Christian voters who identify as Christian for GOP candidates or for the president. And here's a Buttigieg who said he's willing to debate head-to-head President Trump about religion.
If a guy like Donald Trump keeps trying to use religion to somehow recruit Christianity into the GOP. I will be standing there not afraid to talk about a different way to answer the call of faith and insist that God does not belong to a political party.
That's former Mayor Pete Buttigieg last night in Des Moines. And here's Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar. She talked about her criticism or concerns with Medicare for All, the health care plan from Senator Bernie Sanders.
Senator Sanders and I have worked together on pharmaceuticals for a long, long time, and we agree on this. But what I don't agree with is that his position on health care. This debate isn't real. I was in Vegas the other day, and someone said, don't put your chips on a number on the wheel that isn't even on the wheel. That's the problem.
Senator Amy Klobuchar last night in Des Moines. Okay, so back into our metaphorical on-point caucus room here. And joining us now from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, is Libby Slappy. She's a supporter of Mayor Pete Buttigieg. And she's also a development director for the Kids First Law Center. Libby, welcome to our little on-point mini-caucus.
Hello, Magnus. Thank you so much for including me.
It's great to have you. Also with us from Cedar Rapids as well is Ann Solomon. She is a supporter of Senator Cory Booker, who is no longer in the race. And Ann is also a hospital pharmacist as well. Ann, welcome to you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And I should say that you and Libby are neighbors, right?
We're neighbors, plus we belong to the same church.
Okay, so is there a lot of discussion there about the election and the caucuses between the two of you?
I'm an 8 o'clocker. She's a 10:30.
Okay. Well, so, Ann, let me ask you. You had your heart and mind set on Senator Cory Booker. He just recently exited the race, so what are you going to do on caucus day?
Well, on caucus night, I am still going to go stand in a corner. First preference is Cory Booker. So out of principle, I will stand for him. And then I've got to decide on my second and third preference. And that's where I am at this point, trying to make up my mind on those second and third choices in case my second isn't viable also.
Is that a possibility? Do you have someone in mind as a second right now?
I had been saying that Amy was my second choice, but I do like her. I worry about her electability, even though this was an issue last night. I worry about Americans' perception of electing a woman. What it comes down to, though, is the mud that is going to be slung by the GOP propaganda machine. And I look at the different candidates out there, and I think, What is going to be slung that Americans are going to swallow and believe? And so I want someone who can handle all that and be able to, yes, beat Trump. But I also like the idea of a moderate, which for me then rules out Sanders or Warren, because I don't believe that moderate Americans, disillusioned Republicans, they may not like Trump, but there's no way they're going to vote for Sanders or Warren.
Okay.
And I feel we need to get those voters out on election night and to vote for the Democratic nominee.
Okay, so Libby, so Ann is going to be standing in the room on caucus night, resolute in her support for Senator Booker, but she's also kind of she's opening the door here to your candidate.
I mean, you bet she is.
So convince her.
Well, I would encourage Ann to look at who has voted for Pete Buttigieg in the past. Remember, he's from Indiana. So people who have voted for Mike Pence, you know, as governor, have voted for Pete Buttigieg. Frankly, people who have voted for Donald Trump have voted for Pete Buttigieg as mayor.
But you could say the same thing for Amy Klobuchar, that she turned these red counties blue.
Sure, but let's look at the difference between Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg. You know, what Pete brings to the table is an outside Washington perspective, which, frankly, I think the world is ready for.
But you
a little
know,
fresh
but you know,
perspective.
Libby, President Johnson in the 60s was able to develop his great society because of his background, his connections with the other senators and stuff that he came from. So he was able to do, I don't know, backroom deals or whatever. He knew the strings to pull and stuff. So yes, there's an advantage to coming from outside, but there's also a disadvantage. Think of Jimmy Carter as a governor from Georgia coming to D.C. I mean, having those connections can work to your benefit trying to pass things. The president just cannot pass things on his own. He has to work with Congress.
I understand what you're saying. I think the last thing that the country wants right now is backroom deals. I think what the country wants is someone who is an optimist, who...
That was Corey.
And in Pete's case, a veteran, I think, is very helpful, a man of faith, you know, someone who is realistic. You know, Pete Buttigieg is inspiring, but realistic at the same time. I mean, his leadership shows, his military background is so very helpful because he understands respect, and that is sorely missing from the current occupant.
I think we're in agreement on that. I think some of the stuff that you said could also apply to Amy. I do worry about Amy being able to break out of the Midwest, if she would be known out of the Midwest. But again, with Pete, I worry about his lack of experience. But then on the other hand, these days, you wonder if experience counts for anything.
Well, I mean, what really caught my attention with Pete, you know, at the very beginning, I saw sincerity, I saw integrity, I saw a genuine interest in others. And then as I watched his campaign unfold in the state of Iowa, the events, you know, the crowds at the events kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then as I'm out in our community, you know, proudly wearing my Pete button, I mean, to the person, everyone who speaks to me looks at that button and says, oh, I like him.
That's what they say about Corey, too. I knocked on at least 125 doors, and people said, oh, they liked Corey. And he was the least disliked candidate out there. So it comes down to, yes, there are policies that they would promote, but also the influence they would have on the down ticket. Again, the ability to get people out to vote, not just for them, but for the more Democrats so that they can work with the Congress to get some of this stuff passed. So I guess I am still, you make some good points, but I am still torn between him and Amy.
Ann and Libby, I just want to tiptoe in here a little bit, if I could. Like, this is amazing. Honestly, I think I learned more in the past 5 minutes listening to two of you than I have in quite a while about how people are feeling about this election.
Yeah.
But Libby, if I may, I mean, I'm just thinking about Ann's support for Senator Booker and Mayor Pete Buttigieg's trouble that he's been having with African-American voters. Now, if Democrats believe that turnout is going to be extremely important in this election, in the general, are you a little concerned that Mayor Buttigieg hasn't been able to break through with, you know, the group of voters who really form the heart of the Democratic base?
Well, I look at his experience in his own community and the diversity of South Bend, Indiana, and the kind of support that he has there from African Americans. I mean, when you think about a year ago, nobody even knew who Pete was. Nobody could even pronounce his name. And, you know, the first time I saw him, okay, maybe there were 50 people there. My point is now there are literally hundreds upon hundreds of people who want to see Pete Buttigieg. And I'm convinced that African Americans who get the chance to hear him will be as sold as I am. They just haven't had the chance to hear him.
Anne?
Again, I would like to know where Amy is with the support from the African American community and minorities in general, and for either one, what the moderate independent voter
feels about him, about both of them, because that's what it comes down to in this election, is getting those people who are disillusioned Republicans and who are moderate independent voters to get them to vote for our Democrat nominee.
Can I just tell you both that I wish one day that I could come and have like a dinner table coffee with the two of you, because this was absolutely incredible. Will you be caucusing in the same place on caucus night?
Yes, yes,
you
will. Precinct 24.
Okay. So after the caucuses, I want to check in with both of you to see what ended up happening, if that's okay.
But Magna, I'll be working on Anne in the meantime. Trust me.
Well, Libby Slappy and Ann Solomon, both speaking to us from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, in our On Point mini caucus today. Thank you both so very much.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to talk with some folks who are thinking over Vice President Joe Biden, and we'll hear more from our On Point listeners in Iowa in this experimental On Point mini caucus today. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're doing something a little bit different this hour. We're experimenting with an On Point mini caucus because the Iowa caucuses are about 3 weeks away now. And so we've created this metaphorical room in our mind's eye, a radio version of a Iowa precinct here, and seeing what Iowa voters think as they look towards basically casting their first votes in this presidential election season. We started out the hour hearing from supporters of Senator Elizabeth Warren and Senator Bernie Sanders. Before the break, we heard from two neighbors in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, who was all in for Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and another, Ann Solomon, who is still going to stand in the corner for Cory Booker and wait to see who might convince her to move somewhere else. So now let's talk about people tussling over Vice President Joe Biden. Here's a moment yesterday from the Democratic presidential debate in Des Moines, where former Vice President Biden really noted his broad support. He said that he has nationally. So here he is.
Look, I've been the object of his affection now more than anybody else in the state. I've taken all the hits he can deliver, and I'm getting better in the polls, my going up. And by the way, I have overwhelming support from the African-American community, overwhelming, more than everybody else in this operation.
Vice President Joe Biden last night, and when he said, I've been the object of his affection now more than anybody else on this stage, the vice president was referring to President Donald Trump. Let's go to Jane, who's calling from Fairfield, Iowa. Jane, you're on the air. Who do you think you're going to be caucusing for?
Hi, Meghna. Thank you very much for your show. My husband and I have had the same issues as I think it was Mary Lee, who wasn't sure who she was going to vote for in the caucuses, who she was going to side with. Mm. And our experience was that there were a lot of good ideas out there that, you know, when we went to see each candidate, we thought, yeah, that's a good idea, or that's a good idea, or that's a good idea. And then about 2 weeks ago, we went to see Joe Biden in Grinnell, and we realized by, you know, listening to him, being with him, that we were for sure going to caucus for him.
Why?
And the reasons, I mean, I know I have to be succinct, but one thing is that he can take the reins of the government immediately. He's completely capable, and he's very cogent. His answers were extremely informative and comprehensive. He's very competent. And another reason is that he wasn't ranting about anything. He mm-hmm. was. We felt much better from being with him because we feel that the ideas presented by most of the candidates will find their way into policy in the United States. But this is a man who is kind, he's honest, he's generous of heart, and he's very competent. And so we feel like he has the best chance of unifying the country.
Uh-huh.
And if there's anything that's important, it's unifying the country.
Right, right. Well, Jane, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Robert, who's calling from Grinnell, Iowa. Robert, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes, we are definitely caucusing for Bernie. The last time around we caucused for Bernie, we knew a avowed Second Amendment voter never voted Democrat in his life. He caucused for Bernie. It was about health care. Bernie is willing to make changes. People voted for Trump because they wanted a change. They didn't want things as they were, which was what Hillary was not going to change anything. They wanted changes. So they voted for Trump because it was a vote for either no change or a vote for change. And they mm-hmm. voted for Trump. That's why we are caucusing for Bernie. Bernie is willing to change things.
So that means that you definitely wouldn't caucus for a senator. Sorry, excuse me, I keep doing that. Vice President Joe Biden. You don't see him
definitely
as change.
Definitely not Biden.
Okay. Well, Robert, thank you so much for your call. Now, okay, we've heard from various folks who have their mindsets on their candidates, but it turns out that about right now in Iowa, it seems as if undecided Iowans might be forming the biggest block of Iowa caucus goers. So let's go back into our On Point caucus room and talk to two currently undecided Iowans. Laurel Wenzel joins us from Waterloo, Iowa. Laurel is a director of marketing for YMCA of Blackhawk County and is currently undecided, perhaps leaning towards Andrew Yang. Laurel, welcome to you.
Hello.
It's great to have you. And also from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, Tom Fuller joins us. Tom is a retired maintenance supervisor for the city of Cedar Rapids. Tom is currently undecided as well. Did have his heart on Senator or his mind set on Senator Kamala Harris before she dropped out of the race. So, Tom, welcome to you.
Hi, you guys.
Okay. So, Laurel, let me ask you first here. What's keeping you undecided right now? What have you not found in any of the candidates that you feel like you can throw your full support behind?
A unifying presence, I think, is what I don't see in any of the candidates, especially last night on the debate stage. I was really disappointed that there was nobody that was wanting to kumbaya with the rest of the candidates and be like, let's do this together, because inevitably, that is what is going to happen, right? Inevitably, we're going to have one candidate and it's going to be Democrat versus Republican. But I don't feel like anybody is on the same page up on that stage. And it's frustrating because I want a unified spirit within the party, which is why I go to caucus, because I go to caucus for the policies of the party as well as the policies of the individual.
Okay. So, Tom, are you actually truly still undecided, or are you kind of trying to, you're leaning one way or the other?
Well, I'm still undecided. To me, it seems like we have a large field of very qualified people. And so that makes the decision harder because they're all good. So what I'm considering going to is someone that can immediately restore our credibility with the world. I think we're the laughing stock now, and I think we need to regain our the mantle of leadership and respect and get our credibility back. And a friend of mine who was a Cory Booker supporter, very adamant, he just the next day went to Joe Biden very strongly.
Uh-huh.
And so I've been looking at Biden. That would much, I hope, restore our credibility with the world pretty much out of the gate.
Okay.
And it seems to me that when you have this confusing mass of people, that having somebody with the roots of being with Obama and all of his years in the Senate, that's sort of a direct line with all these other candidates kind of swarming around it.
Okay,
if
so
that makes any sense.
It does. And let me tiptoe in here again, because Laurel, did I hear you kind of sigh?
It was a very strong sigh
regarding Joe Biden. Okay, so Tom may be thinking about Joe Biden, but it sounds like you're like anybody but Joe.
Well, I mean, I think that it's a fallacy to assume that his credibility outside of this United States is going to provide any sense of security when he's in office. I think that, unfortunately, impeachment aside, the investigation that Trump was going for has really broken my confidence in Joe Biden. And that's something that we haven't really heard, at least I haven't heard much about, but you can be darned that he's going to lay into that on the debate stage if Biden becomes the nominee. And I'm concerned. I'm concerned it's going to be another Hillary Clinton where, you know, you support her, you like her, and then all of a sudden this thing comes out and it's like, oh,
okay. So
isn't going to unify the party.
So let me ask both of you. We've just got a couple minutes left with the two of you. And Tom, I'll start with you. Is there anything that you heard from your fellow Iowans this hour that might have convinced you one way or the other?
Not yet. Two women that go to the same church were really, really enlightening. And I'm going to re-listen to this and listen carefully to what they had to say.
That was Ann and Libby, yep, in Cedar Rapids.
Nothing, you know, no epiphany yet.
But, you still got 3 weeks.
Certainly very interesting points they made. I still think maybe I'm leaning towards Biden. There was a reason that Trump went after him. I feel like Trump thinks that he's the strongest candidate, and that's why he attacked him. And
everybody thinks he's the strongest.
I'm sorry?
Everybody thinks he's the strongest candidate. I mean, you could see it on the debate stage last night. They wanted to give Elizabeth Warren the last word, and then all of a sudden Biden was able to rebuttal before the commercial break. I mean, everybody expects Joe Biden to win this nomination, and I think that's the disappointing thing, is that we have all of our hopes and dreams in this guy that is just, he's tired. Mm. He looks tired. He looks, you know, like he has so much that he wants to give, but he physically is just not going to be able to do it. And I understand that. So that's why I'm just like, you know, you are a great idea. And if you could just throw your support against, you know, another candidate, I feel like that would be best in the end. But, you know, that's not going to happen before the Iowa caucuses.
Well, Laurel, did you hear anything this hour that might have helped clarify the direction you're going to go in a couple of weeks?
You know, I did. I've been fighting with my interest in Elizabeth Warren. Because I remember when I first saw her on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and she reminded me of my history professor because that's what she was. And I have been fighting with that instinct to feel, you know, cast down by her in a sense, like she knows everything. But at the same time, I do feel like she is the best candidate on that stage and that her policies are really about the people. They will impact me and my family with my son who, you know, needs long-term care because he's disabled. I'm ready for a woman. I'm ready for that feminine touch. Wow. So I really feel like between the debate last night and what I heard today, Elizabeth Warren seems like the best one.
And if I might interject, I thought we'd be past having to think about either having a man or a woman, and that we would just be at the place where we would pick the best person.
It really yeah, but we've never had a woman.
That we have, that we're not that far down the road yet. We shouldn't, gender shouldn't matter. It should just be the best person. And I'm pretty disappointed that we haven't gone that far yet.
Well, Tom Fuller from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Tom, thank you so much for joining us in our little On Point mini caucus here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
And definitely go back and listen. OnPointRadio.org. That's where you're going to find it, okay? And let us know what you think about what Ann and Libby had to say. And Laurel Wenzel from Waterloo, Iowa, thank you so much for joining us in our little mini caucus room here.
Thank you. It was a great opportunity, and I hope that everybody that's listening in Iowa goes out and caucus on February 3rd.
Oh, yeah, same here. I definitely, and everybody should always participate in the electoral process as much as they possibly can. So, Laurel, thank you again. Okay, so that was one of the more fascinating hours that I've had a chance to listen to. So let me turn back to our On Point news analyst, Jack Beatty, the marvelous Jack Beatty, who's been listening in from Hanover, New Hampshire. Jack, we got about 2.5 minutes left here. What did you hear?
Well, I heard voters who were just not only interested, but intensely interested. And with Laurel, we actually heard an informed sigh. I mean, even her sigh was informative. We knew what she meant. One of the knocks on the caucus is it's undemocratic. It's the no secret ballot. Mm-hmm. You've got to stand at a place for a polling place or church basement for hours. You've got to do it in public. But on the other hand, that encourages people to talk in public. And look how these people talked to each other, not past each other, met the arguments, met the objections, saw the merit in the other person's point of view. It modeled Iowa's citizenship at its best.
I would agree, right? I mean, hearing Ann and Libby and Laurel and Tom and Barney and Mike all engage with each other was really inspirational. But as you said, the actual caucus itself, I mean, I read someone described it as a sort of like it's almost a student council, a student president election because it can be so wild. But to your original point, though, Jack, that you made at the beginning of the hour, and we've got about 30 seconds left here. Is there anything that you heard in these voters that changes your concern that, you know, the Iowans don't really pick winners?
Well, they're concerned to pick a winner, and that I may matter as much as anything. I mean, I didn't hear purity. I didn't hear someone saying, well, my commitment is to this candidate's ideas above everything. Everyone seemed to hedge. I want a winner. Maybe they'll pick one.
Right. That definitely came through loud and clear with all of our Iowans today. But the reasons why they think their candidates might be a winner were quite different from one another, which was absolutely fascinating. So Jack Beatty, On Point News Analyst with us from Hanover, New Hampshire. The New Hampshire primary hot on the heels of the Iowa caucuses.
Yes.
So Jack, we're diving all in now. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jack.
Thank you, Meghna.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and thank you all listening to our experimental On Point mini caucus. Go to onpointradio.org to let us know what you thought about it, or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful. and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices. And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.